Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. It's a lot of things that you do, David. That's good.
It is indeed. And this is the most important one of all, is talking with you every week.
Ha. Well said. The films are The Shadow of Violence, Route 1, USA, and my favorite, Jazz on a Summer's Day. There you go.
There you go.
Well, all yours.
You did a beautiful job of that. Thank you very much. And yeah, so we have this week a fiction film and then a couple of documentaries. So let's begin with our fiction film, which is called The Shadow of Violence. And it is directed by a new filmmaker. He's done a little bit of work before, but this is his first feature film, named Nick Rowland. And this is a British-Irish production. It's very Irish in its characters and where it takes place and so forth. And I will say at the get-go that the title is The Shadow of Violence, but the violence is not in the shadows. The violence is really in your face. So if you want a literally hard-hitting melodrama, family drama with people who sometimes communicate by sort of bashing each other in the face and that sort of thing, then this is the movie for you. If not, then this is probably not the movie for you. I don't mean to sound flippant about this. It's really a very, very well-made movie. It's a very well-acted movie, and it's a very powerful family drama that touches on a whole lot of different areas of interest in a little over an hour and a half. But I just want to make it really clear that the title, The Shadow of Violence, the operative word there is violence, not shadow. And in fact, in one of the very first scenes, we have a slightly older man who has been accused, and we're never really clear about exactly what happened, but he has been accused by some members of a family of having, as I think somebody puts it in the film, interfered with the underage daughter of the family. Basically, he just got totally drunk one night and apparently tried to climb into bed with her, and it's unclear whether anything happened after that, but the family is convinced that this person committed a completely unforgivable sin, as in fact he may have. Again, it's just not clear, but they send out this family. Their name is Devers, the Devers family. They have this guy who works for them, whose name is Arm, and he is basically their enforcer, and basically he does whatever they tell him to do. He was once a boxer. He's a young guy, but he already has a history. He was a boxer, and inadvertently he killed an opponent during a boxing match in the ring. That happens sometimes, and it's one of the very sad things that makes some people wonder whether boxing should be considered a legitimate sport. But that happened to him, and he felt terrible about it for obvious reasons, and he decided to give up the boxing, and then he got this job working for this family, again, doing sort of whatever they want. But they are not a nice family. They're not nice people, and they very often have him do things such as beat this old man, who they suspect strongly of this crime, to beat him almost to death. And then after he does that, and this is still the very beginning of the movie, the family decides that, well, maybe that old fellow wasn't punished enough. So now you got to go after him, and you got to do even more bad stuff to him. And so that's the kind of movie this is. However, that's not the only kind of movie this is, because there's a whole major subplot about Arm and his ex-wife and their little boy, who is apparently autistic or something along those lines. It's not really quite clear what his problem is, but he has trouble communicating with people, and he's a troubled little boy, very little boy. So there's a whole subplot about him and his mother and their relationship with Arm, and every once in a while Arm is supposed to look after the little kid for a while, and that does not work out awfully well, although there's certainly no violence there. He really does love the boy. And the big question about what is going to happen to the ex-wife and what is going to happen to the little boy. But the main plot has to deal with Arm and his working for this exceedingly unpleasant family, and the things that they require him to do and ask him to do. The thing is that Arm, deep down, is not completely bad guy. Again, he felt really badly about what happened in the boxing ring, even though it was inadvertent. And now he sometimes has trouble carrying out an instruction that he is given by this family, because it's just too much for even him. And that kind of thing also lends tension to the movie. There's some really good people in the movie. Ned Dennehy, who has been in Peaky Blinders, Barry Keoghan, who was in Dunkirk, various others. It's a very, very well-acted movie. It's a very well-written movie. And I found it quite, I would call it mainly a story of crime and violence. Not crime in the sense of bank robbery, but crime in the sense of various other kinds of more personal things than that. And it's also a family drama or melodrama. I found it to be very, very effectively done. I'm not sure how much of an audience it's going to find, because it really is quite violent. But then again, in this age of streaming videos, I think that a lot of people are probably going to run across it. And those, again, who can handle the violence will find it a very well-acted and powerful kind of family crime or crime family drama. I want to mention the original title of it was Calm with Horses. And the word calm has very little to do with this movie, even though there are some horses in it. The Shadow of Violence is a better title for it. Again, one more time I'll mention, the violence is not in the shadows. It's right there in your face. Now I would like to talk about a couple of documentaries. And the first one, these are both revivals of older films, but again, they're streaming and they're very easy to get a hold of now. And the first one dates from 1989. It's called Route 1 USA, or Route 1 USA. And it was made by Robert Kramer, one of the founders a few decades ago of the radical filmmaking group, political filmmaking group called Newsreel. And he himself was a very political filmmaker during his lifetime. Very, very left-wing political filmmaker who always was trying to get across critiques of various aspects of American capitalism and so forth in his films. One thing I should mention at the get-go is that Route 1 USA is over 4 hours long. So if you want to look at it, maybe you better plan to put some time into it. That said, for all of its long-running time, it does not have much in the way of linear argument to make. Again, it's a documentary, and here's what it's about. The filmmaker, and we don't really see him, we hear him once in a while, but a friend of his, and this is a guy who collaborated with Robert Kramer on a number of films, this guy who is known as Doc, and he is an MD, he's a physician, who has just been working for 10 years in Africa, again, you know, working with the poor, working with the underprivileged, working with people who desperately need help, very sort of humanitarian impulse. He has been, and you know, all this is real. He is just back in the United States after 10 years in Africa. And he and Kramer decide to take a trip through America and just sort of get the lay of the land. McIsaac, Doc, has been away for a while, and he wants to sort of see how America seems now that he's back after about a decade. And the filmmaker is always happy to travel through America and document it and get records of how things are, how things appear to be going. And after trying one or two ideas about how they might make this trip, they finally decide to go all the way from the Canadian border on the East Coast and just go straight down Route 1, hence the title of the movie, Route 1 USA, and they end up in the Florida Keys. And along the way, they stop off in a whole number of cities and towns, and they basically just talk to people. That is to say, Kramer's camera gets views and documents the way things look and tries to get a sense of the atmosphere of different places. And in the meanwhile, he and Doc, who is, you know, again, a real person, but is sort of a character in this movie, just talk to a lot of people. And these are not probing interviews. They are just talks about what's on your mind. What do you care about these days? What do you think about this issue or that issue? There is certainly some talk about political matters. That is, matters that were hot political issues back in around the late 1980s. But there's also just talk about, you know, how do you live your life? What do you do? How do you get through the day? How do you feel about America today? And that sort of thing. So it is a very meandering film. Route 1 goes on more or less a straight line from way up north to way down south on the east coast of America. But it meanders along the way. It is not, of course, a straight line. It's a road, and it has its little divergations here and there. And the movie is like that, too. It reminds me a lot of the work that has been done by Frederick Wiseman, who is the greatest of all American documentary makers. And Wiseman tends to make portraits of institutions, American institutions of various kinds. Sometimes they are places, sometimes they are organizations, sometimes they are public facilities. But he makes movies with titles like Juvenile Court and High School. and so forth. And what he does is it's very cinema verite. He goes in with his camera and he simply documents things, and there's no narrator to tell you what to think about things or tell you how to think about things, and it's just people talking, people doing things, and then organized in these very elegant shapes by Wiseman himself. And that's more or less the way Route 1 USA operates. That's pretty much the way Kramer has put it together. Again, it's not about an institution or a place. It's about a journey, and that's one of the reasons why it's so long, more than 4 hours. But like Fred Wiseman, Robert Kramer is just interested in capturing the mood and the practices of certain parts of America at a particular time, and he succeeds very much in doing that in Route 1 USA. So even though it's a movie with a very meandering structure, it never settles down in one place for long. It goes from place to place, from location to location. I found it quite absorbing. Obviously, it's not a movie you can watch with a lot of impatience. You got to sort of sit back and know this is going to be a long journey. But like a long journey, if you just sort of settle back and decide to enjoy the ride, I found it quite an absorbing film. And our third movie for today, Jill, is called Jazz on a Summer's Day, and it was made in 1959. Again, it's been restored, and it looks terrific now, digitized. It was directed by a guy named Bert Stern, not a very well-known filmmaker, but he made this one really, really marvelous movie years ago. That is to say, it's the movie that he is really known for. There have been some terrific movies about music festivals over the years. One thinks of the movie Woodstock, and everybody can guess what that's about. There was a movie called Monterey Pop, which dealt with the Monterey Pop Festival. Again, these are old movies, but that was sort of a fashionable kind of a film some years ago. And Jazz on a Summer's Day is very much that kind of movie, because it is all about the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Newport was the host of the Newport Jazz Festival for many, many years, and also the Newport Folk Festival. And this is just about 1 year's edition of the festival. And what Bert Stern and his various colleagues managed to do was to just get up real close to the action. And they give us a whole lot of up close and personal views of a whole lot of absolutely fabulous acts from around the time when the movie was made, 1959. Now, that's not all there is in the movie. Sometimes there are views of other things, and sometimes it's not exactly clear just what these other things are or why we're seeing them. There are times when we see some different kinds of musicians who seem to be sitting in a living room somewhere, and we're not sure exactly why they're in the living room or instead of on the stage of the festival, and exactly what they're doing with each other and so forth. And then there are also just some beautiful sort of atmospheric shots. There's also a yacht race going on at the same time as the festival, and we see some gorgeous shots of just magnificent-looking boats out there on the water. And so, you know, there's that, too. The weather is certainly great. So there's that kind of thing, too. But mainly, Jazz on a Summer's Day is about jazz. It is about the music. So let me tell you some of the people who are in it. Louis Armstrong, probably the greatest jazz trumpeter who ever lived, one of the great geniuses of American art of any kind. And he is very much in the movie playing his trumpet and singing and having a wonderful time doing it. The terrific baritone sax player Jerry Mulligan is pretty prominent in it. George Shearing, one of the great jazz pianists, in my opinion, is in it. Thelonious Monk, another one of the great jazz pianist. And again, George Shearing and Thelonious Monk have styles that are so different from each other. It's just marvelous to see them not side by side, but within the same movie and playing in the same festival and pleasing audiences to equal degrees. Big Maybelle, very, very, very hefty jazz singer. She's quite wonderful as well. I'm just mentioning some of the high points here. Jimmy Jufra, the terrific clarinet player. Anita O'Day does some beautiful singing. Dinah Washington does some equally beautiful singing. Chico Hamilton is there. And near the end, we have Mahalia Jackson, the fabulous gospel singer. And she delivers a rendition of the Lord's Prayer. And I have to say, the movie is not equal in its fascination, at least not for me. I found the Mahalia Jackson performance at the end to be very reverent and very beautiful, but it's not exciting in the way that the other music in the film is, so most of the other music at least. So the movie is not entirely even, nor is it monochromatic in the way that the artist that it presents. Guess who's there along with these jazz people like George Shearing and Thelonious Monk and Louis Armstrong? Chuck Berry is there doing his rock and roll. And that's just fine with me, because he was one of the great innovators and great pioneers and great artists of the rock and roll guitar and vocal. And it's just wonderful to see him there too. So Jazz on a Summer's Day, if you like jazz at all, if you like summer's days at all, I could not recommend it more highly. It's only about an hour and a half long, and it just presents one act after another, and you'll have a good time with it. So of all the three movies that I'm talking about today, Jill, Jazz on the Summer on a Summer's Day is the one that is the most just pure, unalloyed pleasure. And that is my somewhat non-fictional story this week, Jill.
Nothing like a little entertainment. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films The Shadow of Violence, Route 1 USA, and Jazz on a Summer's Day.